For more talks and meditations, go to GloriaKGreen.com. Vulnerability, the foundation for self-compassion and loving kindness. Today we're talking about vulnerability, which I think is the foundation for any practicing of self-compassion or loving kindness. And Chris Germer says, when we practice self-compassion, instead of going with our first instinct when we feel shame, which is go small, go silent, or go away, we learn to acknowledge ourselves with understanding and kindness. And I found that to be really true. When we think about vulnerability, when we see someone else being vulnerable, we might look at that and say, wow, that took a lot of strength to do that. But when we think about vulnerability in ourselves, we think about a weakness, that there's something wrong with us, that we have to be vulnerable. We should all be strong and tough and not need anything. Because who here in this room or on Zoom has a wish to be vulnerable? I don't see a hand up. Nobody wants to be vulnerable. Matter of fact, I've been meaning to do this talk for a couple of months now, and decided, okay, now it's time. Be courageous and be vulnerable. We don't want to be vulnerable because we associate vulnerability with emotions like fear. You know, it's scary to be vulnerable. We associate it with shame. We want to hide our shame because we don't want anyone to see we're vulnerable. We associate it with grief or sadness or disappointment, all the negative emotions that we don't really want to feel. Those are the emotions I want to sweep under the carpet. I don't know about you. They're the emotions we try to ignore, even though they have a profound impact on our relationships and our lives. Brené Brown says, what most of us fail to understand, and what took me a decade of research to learn, is that vulnerability is also the cradle of the emotions and experiences that we crave. Vulnerability is the birthplace of love, belonging, joy, courage, empathy, and creativity. It's the source of hope, empathy, accountability, and authenticity. If we want greater clarity in our purpose or deeper and more meaningful spiritual lives, vulnerability is the path. But vulnerability is really scary, especially when we have this underlying sense of unworthiness or not being good enough. We're afraid that people might see we're not really enough, that we're unlovable, or that we're failures. And our culture doesn't help because it encourages us to connect our self-worth to whatever we produce. We're only as good as the last thing that we did. And also, we hide any of our flaws. And with anything, when we hide it and keep it in the dark and don't talk about it, that shame grows and grows. And that shame keeps us small and resentful. Resentful because we can't be who we want to be, and small because we're contracted, trying to hide ourselves, not going after what we want or need. So Brené Brown says, vulnerability is the core of all emotion and feeling. To feel is to be vulnerable. To believe vulnerability is a weakness is to believe that feeling is a weakness. To foreclose on our emotional life out of a fear that costs will be too high to walk away from the very thing that gives purpose and meaning to life. We walk away from the things that would give purpose and meaning to our lives because we're afraid of being vulnerable. For me, vulnerability translated directly to shame. One of the things I felt shame my entire life is I had incontinence as a child. First grade, I would wet my pants, and the teacher, the nun, told me, just ask when you have to go to the bathroom. But when I did, I got this very disapproving look. So I was scared to death to ask because I didn't want that look, and I often waited until it was too late. So it's something that I haven't really shared with anyone, but makes me feel very vulnerable. I never told my parents that I had it. I'm sure they probably knew. They never talked to me about it. But it made me feel like there was something wrong with me, that I was broken, that I couldn't wait like all the other kids could wait till whatever the set time to go to the bathroom was. So I felt a lot of my inner critic acts up. And throughout my life, I find when I'm in very stressful times, I have to be very careful because incontinence can come back. I think my body produces a lot more urine when I'm stressed. And maybe that's due to stress creates inflammation and urine helps flush it out. I don't know, but I have to be very careful because it brings up this shame. And to add on to this shame, and Ginny, you'll remember Billy, that's the one I named my inner critic after. He used to call me Piss Pod in 7th, 8th grade because he remembered what happened. And so there was more shame that I'm terrible and trying to kind of be invisible because you didn't want that. I've talked about the story of in 7th grade when my friend Joan told me she didn't want to hang out with me anymore. And I went home all upset, and my older sister saw me crying as I was walking up the stairs to the house. And she said, run up to the bathroom and wash your face so Mom doesn't know you're crying. That just fed into the example of you should be ashamed. Don't tell anybody about this. Hide this. And so I did for, I don't know how many years. Ginny, I think when we got together probably 5 years ago, I told you guys about it. And that was probably the first I've told anybody. No, second. I told the women at Tichita before that. So you keep quiet. And when you keep quiet and silent, you think that you're the only one. And you are not kind to yourself. You beat yourself up. Well, if you would have done something different, that wouldn't have happened. You know, what could I have done different as a first grader? Well, I had adults who probably could have done something different that didn't. And in 7th grade, what could I have done different? I don't know. But I could have been kinder to myself and say, you know what, that hurt. And I didn't. Instead, I beat myself up. What are you worrying about that for? Give it a break. That's long gone. Ignore it. Brush it under the carpet. That kind of thing. So that's really the opposite of self-compassion. Remember, we've talked about self-compassion as mindfulness. So being aware of what's going on. And I was trying to play whack-a-mole to push it down. It's common humanity. I found out after I told my sister about the incident, that she had a similar incident that I never knew about. You know, and she's a sister who's a year younger than me. And we both kept it quiet. So there wasn't the common humanity. There's lots of people who've been rejected by friends in their life. I wasn't the only one, but I thought I was. And then kindness is the third part. And I wasn't kind to myself because I was just beating myself up. You should be able to just get over it. Just don't worry about it. How many have heard that is a way to deal with any negative emotions. So it's the opposite of being self-compassionate. And so I realized that my inability to face my vulnerabilities made it near impossible for me to practice either self-compassion or loving kindness for myself. And I say that with 20/20 hindsight, because I had projected this carefully curated image of being knowledgeable, competent, even-keeled, and most important of all, being need-free. I didn't need anything from anyone. I was just okay, when I really wasn't. So there was no room in my life for my needs or any negative emotions to get in the way. I had too much I had to do. I swept any negative emotion or problem that I couldn't immediately solve under the carpet. And this was probably done often unconsciously, but it takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of effort to pretend like everything's okay, that you're okay, that you don't have vulnerabilities, that you're not afraid of things. So when I learned about loving kindness, it was easy for me to do for loved ones. I could do it for neutral people. I could even do it for difficult people. But I conveniently skipped over doing it for myself for a long period of time. I'm talking 6-9 months. I also had been reading about self-compassion and knew that practicing self-compassion would be good for me. I read a lot of Kristen Neff and Chris Germer's books, but reading the books and practicing are not the same thing. I read all about the benefits and knew self-compassion would be good for me, but I couldn't do it for myself. It was on my, and this is a new term I learned, my one-day list, which is something that I'm going to do one day, but it was not on my day one list, something that I'm going to do today. So I had a strong aversion to practicing loving kindness for myself or to practicing self-compassion, either of them. I just couldn't do it. And I went through meditation teacher training, and when Tara Brach would talk about self-compassion or something would come up, she would just put her hand on her heart and say, "It's okay, sweetheart." And I was like, ooh, I could never do that. Not in a million years. I can't call myself sweetheart. That's just too corny. It just seemed very unnatural and stilted and just not me. But through the multiple week-long workshops of the teacher training and the monthly small group workshops, I did develop the strength to begin some self-compassion and loving-kindness practices for myself. And what gave me the strength was starting to see that I'm worthy. I don't need to be perfect to be worthy. And I learned that I was getting strong enough to face my vulnerabilities. I'll be forever indebted to one friend, Leah, who I met at teacher training, who always encouraged me by asking, "Can you be with it for just a moment? Can you just be with it for a moment?" When I would want to be pushing things away. And she'd say, "Can you just be with it for a moment?" And I could be with it for a moment. And once I learned to be with it for a moment, I could be with it for 2 moments. And I've been sitting with these things for 5 years now before I can actually talk about my shame of incontinence. Because it takes a long time to build up that strength, that muscle, that courage to say, yes, I'm vulnerable, I'm not perfect, but I'm okay. And I had to sit with that little girl who was hurt, and that eighth grader who was mortified, and the adult who was mortified when things happened. So it takes a long time. And just as I was preparing this talk and deciding whether or not I was going to do it, I came across some other information about self-compassion that I hadn't read before. And one of the things I learned that fear or aversion to self-compassion arises in those who grow up with insecure attachment to our parents. And that's 40% of the population. You know, I grew up in a large family. While my parents took good care of us, they didn't take care of all of our emotional needs. People who struggle with chronic shame, which was me, or chronic self-criticism, which is again me, also find self-compassion very scary. And if you fall in one of these categories, you might find that your attempts to practice self-compassion bring up feelings of self-disgust or sadness or disappointment or anxiety or even anger. And so I thought about it, and you know, I did have a happy childhood. My parents took care of us best they can, but you can't attend to the emotional needs of 10 children if you're one mother, and my father was a doctor and put in horrendous hours to support us. So it was really all on my mom. And my mom had a habit of pushing anything unpleasant under the carpet. And so I followed her lead. From my earliest memories, I always tried to hide any imperfections or negative feelings. I felt there was kind of an unwritten rule that you don't bother people with your problems. And so I kept them hidden, not just from others, but as best I could from myself. And so I didn't really have the emotional memories of feeling secure and supported that self-compassion can really activate. I didn't know what that feeling was. And I somehow came to believe that if I showed any needs, emotional or otherwise, I'd be perceived as weak and a problem, and that people wouldn't want to deal with it. As a matter of fact, until after my teacher training, I couldn't ask for or even accept support when I needed it. Even when I was going through my divorce, I didn't reach out to anyone for support other than a counselor. I just couldn't, because it was a source of shame that my marriage failed. I was Catholic. Oh my gosh, Catholic getting divorced? You're a bad person. So when I saw Tara Brach display self-compassion, it wasn't like, "It's okay, sweetheart," was comforting to me. It took me years to be able to put my hand on my heart. I still don't call myself sweetheart, but I can say it's okay, or I'm sorry you're hurting, or some of those other things. But when I saw Tara doing it, it kind of was like threatening to me, like, "Ooh, you know, don't do that to me. That's not me. My inner critic, I think, was having a field day saying, "You're not worth it. You don't deserve to say it's okay. You don't deserve that compassion." And so if you're like me with insecure attachment or shame or self-criticism, you're going to resist any expression of compassion due to concerns about being rejected, criticized, or feeling undeserving. And so take a moment to look through the self-compassion questionnaire, rating yourself on a scale of 0 to 4, with 0 being disagree and 4 being completely agree, on different statements relating to self-compassion. You may want to pause this recording while you do that. So whether you add up your scores or just look at whether you had lots of zeros, ones, twos, threes, or fours, the higher your score on the questionnaire, the less likely that practicing self-compassion is going to give you a warm and fuzzy feeling. So if you have lots of twos, threes, and fours, trying to practice self-compassion might backfire on you. Because some of us have blocks to giving or receiving compassion. And I know I had a very strong block that I'm starting to overcome. And when that's the case, practicing with a self-compassion meditation just isn't really going to work. And I didn't know this as I was struggling to try and do self-compassion meditation. I was trying through pure grit to get to do it. But you need to do some other things first. So if you're like me and you switched off your awareness of your own needs, or you feel like your needs are not important, practicing self-compassion just feels selfish. Our inner critic kicks in. So according to Paul Gilbert, a researcher, he says some of the practices can be re-traumatizing. So, for example, you try to tell yourself it's okay to feel sad, and maybe you grew up in a household where it wasn't okay to feel sad. Instead of feeling comfort from the words, your inner critic makes you feel bad for feeling sad. Carolyn Benner says the alternative is to practice behavioral self-compassion, or figuring out what you need in the moment to feel soothed. For example, petting your dog or taking a short break from work. When we're upset, though, it can be difficult to practice behavioral self-compassion and figure out what we need in the moment. So we have to think about it before so that we know what we can do in the moment. So Chris Germer suggests you reflect on these questions. What do I need to feel safe? What do you need to feel safe? To be comforted, soothed, and validated. To protect and provide for and motivate yourself. If upon reflecting on those questions you come up with a blank, there are some ideas of behaviors that can be comforting on the Self-Compassion in Daily Life worksheet, which you can see the link on this page. These practices can help you feel safe while practicing self-compassion. And once you're feeling safe, you can move on to the mental practices of self-compassion. Chris Germer gives us a warning about practicing self-compassion. He says, there is a trick to practicing self-compassion. The best advice won't help you if you do not practice self-compassion with the right intentions. Trying to practice self-compassion to manipulate our moment-to-moment experiences will ultimately fail. People need to be guided into practicing for its own sake, as we might care for a child with the flu. Not to drive out the flu, but as a simple expression of sympathy and kindness. So we practice self-compassion not to fix ourselves or to fix the environment. We practice self-compassion because we're hurting and we need someone to be kind and care for us.